morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, depending on where you are and what you're doing. Thank you for tuning into the Aviation RC New Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Allen, and today we have a special episode where we are going to speak with the Hedersheed family. We're going to speak with Larry, Joe, and Nate about their experience getting into the RC aviation hobby. So let's get into it. Okay, so we're going to start our next segment, and it's a new segment we're kind of delving into, and it's about learning from other noobs. We want to talk to people who are, we'll call it, relatively young in the hobby, and who have been through the trials and tribulations that probably maybe you might be going through, or you've been through, and I want to talk about their entry into the hobby and the successes and the pitfalls and what got them there and what kept them going. And, you know, what they're doing today and where they hope to go, right? So I've got three gentlemen here that are from the same family. I would love to, why don't you guys introduce yourselves? Let's start with Larry, and then we'll work around to Dan and Joe.
All right. I'm Larry Hedersheet. We live in Columbus, Ohio, and we've been doing this for, what, about 15 years?
I would guess. About 10 years. 10 or 15 years, something like that.
Yeah, when they were in middle school.
Okay. And Larry, you go by what on your, what's your handle?
Captain Video.
Okay. Well, good. Thank you. Dan, want to introduce yourself?
I'm Dan, 25 years old, lived in Columbus my entire life. Same thing with him, you know, started about 10 to 15 years ago. It's been a major part of our lives, like something I can go see my dad every weekend and hang out and talk about with him. It's one of the staples of my life at this point, and I want to continue doing it for, you know, as long as I possibly can.
Nice. Or what about you, Joe?
Yeah,
welcome to the show.
My name's Joe Hedersheet. Everything that they've said, I don't have much to add on to that.
Okay. Well, good. No. And I know we're going to reach out to one of you guys. I'm going to try to see if we can get back on with your girlfriend. It'll be you and your girlfriend, and talk about how you brought your girlfriend into the hobby. And one of the things that seems to be a prevalent piece is that this hobby is predominantly male focused. I don't know what it is about the male brain that seems to latch on to RC aviation like it's going out of style. But it doesn't seem to be a whole lot of females joining. And I don't want to focus on that per se. I just want to know what her story is. But I'm always curious to, because I've been running that journey of how do I get somebody who is interested but maybe it has a different way of seeing things, and how do you interest them to give it a try? Because I always seem like, hey, if you give it a try, it's going to be a hot short. If you have an okay experience, I think you're going to love it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, as long as you're not tanking it into the ground and going, oh, well, that was it. 1 minute.
Well, tell us the story about how you got Abby into.
Yeah, so I started dating my girlfriend Abby about 2 years ago, and after about a year, we've been together for a while, and I was like, yeah, so there's this hobby that I do with my dad and my brother, and we go out and we fly RC planes, and I expected her to recoil and be like, ew, what a nerd, that's disgusting. And she's like, she was like, oh, that's really interesting, can I come along with you guys and see what that's about? And I was like, awesome. Yeah, definitely. So she, you know, when we went
you guys have been you guys have been in the hobby for like 8 years, 10 years by that point?
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead. It gives like this is where the experience level is at. So going out to the field is a routine thing. It's not I'm still trying to remember all the thing. You've got the this is what we do when we go. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, we've been big into flight tests for years.
Yeah.
So it's goblins, simple sticks, all that stuff, and, trainer planes and whatnot. So go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, so like we brought her along to the flying field, and she was, you know, watching us flying our planes around. She's like, "Oh, this is really cool. This is really interesting." I was like, "Oh, would you like to try?" And she's like, "Ah, I don't know. It seems a little complicated. I don't know if it's something that like I'd be able to do." I was like, "Oh no, it'd be super easy." And my dad had the next time we went to the flying field, my dad secretly had built a FT Simple Stick for her, not specifically for her, but for
To have around. Yeah.
His excuse was that he had built it for newbies that want to try.
There you go.
But so the next time she came, we were like, "Yeah, here's a plane. I'll buddy fly with you. We'll connect our controllers together and I'll fly." And we flew around and she had a blast doing it. And on the way home, I was like, "Oh, like, what'd you think? Did you have fun?" And she was looking at me and she had some like misty eyes and she was like, "Yeah, like, I love this connection you have with your dad." Because like she lost her dad back in 2018. And she told me that her dad used to paint and like make little plane models, miniatures.
Yeah.
And she was like, "I just love to think about him being here with us and doing this thing with you guys, because he would have loved it and he would love that I'm doing this now."
That's so cool. So I cannot wait for us to set up a time where we, the three of us, can talk and kind of get more about that story. Mm-hmm. So tune in, stay tuned, because we'll in one of these future episodes here, we're going to have that in as part of the lineup here. But let's get back to talking about where you guys started, right? And it's going to be, let's go down that same kind of order when we answer these questions. Maybe I might give Joe a chance to lead that on a couple times here. So when were you guys introduced to aviation? You know what I mean? Like, there's sometimes like, "Well, I saw planes. I always thought they were really cool." Or I went to an airport to pick up so-and-so and it was like that changed things. Or I got a chance. You know, what's your experience? Larry?
Oh, well, we have to go into the Wayback Machine for that.
Do you want me to start with Joe, who has further to go back?
I'll keep it short. Okay. Control line.
Okay.
All right, Cox. Like P-57, P-41, go around in circles, make yourself stupid.
Yeah, go in the front yard or whatever it is in the back and stand and go
park,
wear, wear,
wear, wear. Park next to my house, yes.
Yeah.
But I couldn't afford RC. That was back in the 70s. Mm-hmm. It was pricey. It was a little exotic, you know. So once I got tired of going around circles, I moved on to model rockets.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So, and all those were fun. I mean, I had a great time with it. It was affordable and be able to satisfy my, you know, flying desires as far as I could go.
Nice.
And then
I was going to say, so that's where you started. What about the RC aviation? Where did that begin? I guess that would be control line, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's where it came from. It's it'd be cool if we could fly this, you know, remote control.
Dan?
Well, actually, I actually have a little bit of a different story for my sort of introduction. It was sort of more of the introduction into just like aviation in general. Was my uncle used to take us, my brother and I, down to Dayton,
that's right,
to the Air and Space Museum in Dayton. And
nice.
I remember being like this 6, 7, 8 year old kid, just in absolute awe of the size of these planes.
Right.
Getting absolutely dwarfed by this B-52 bomber, these P-47s, these, and then going up and seeing a replica of the lunar lander, stuff like that. It always captured my imagination. I was always just so, so fascinated by it. So when we eventually got to that Christmas that I'm going to let Joe talk about here in a minute, I've always been super fascinated in just these giant tubes that are just flying through the sky at hundreds of miles an hour. It's just always been such a fascinating thing to me.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I imagine as a little kid, and you're like, "These tires are as big as I am." And that's
I have a photo where I think it was me standing next to one of the tires, and I'm not even reaching the rim of the tire.
Yeah,
that's so cool. Yeah, I've got a couple pictures of my kids that way. So what about you, Joe? Was it the similar experience? And then,
yeah. And then like when we were probably in middle school, we like one summer we were just sitting on the couch and my dad had put a YouTube video up on the TV using, I don't even know what you were using, but, I was blown away just seeing a YouTube video on a TV. Cause at the time you didn't get YouTube videos on TV. It'd be like on computers exclusively.
And yeah, no, right. The fact that you could link it to a TV and just go, yeah, it is. And
you're like, that was still very new. So I was fascinated by that. And my dad had, I don't know if it was on purpose or just by happenstance, had put up these crazy guys that were flying these little foam airplanes around on a YouTube channel called Flight Test. And we were like, oh, that's really interesting. That's really cool. And we would watch videos here and there as they would come out. And then for Christmas that year, my dad had gone to, like a garage sale or something and had purchased these massive, balsa wood planes. Some of them were gas and some of them didn't have any motors. And so we tried to take, our first plane was trying to take these massive balsa wood planes, ripping off the motors, slapping a huge, electric motor on, using probably a 2400 battery on it, trying to get it to balance and then taking off. I just remember our first flight just going straight up, flopping on my back, and then it exploded into wood.
Yeah, that's
it, was
the story.
Very tail heavy.
Not all balsa builders, but yeah, at some point or another, their plane turns into toothpicks pretty quick.
Yeah.
And they're like, I think I could glue that back together.
Oh, yeah. It's fixable. Yeah. It's fixable.
Yeah, and it is. That's the thing, is it is. But the question is, do you want to spend the time for that? But
yeah. How much glue you got?
Yeah. Hey, do you guys remember, Larry, do you remember what video it was that you kind of put up on the TV there?
Oh, gosh.
I know it was in the early days, right? Like it was in the
beginning. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was way back when Josh.
Yep.
They were flying. Like at the field where Flight Test is now. I specifically remember their intro screen being that little TV with the Flight Test gremlin in it.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it was too. A long time ago.
Yeah, I just wonder which plane they were working on at that point.
I couldn't tell you.
There are so many videos.
Yeah.
But I can assure you, I put it on the TV on purpose.
Yeah, I know you did.
He knew what he was doing.
You had a plan. Well, what was the first Flight Test video? When did you find Flight Test? Was it like within or like in some of the very early days? And you're like, oh, cool. Yeah. Look at this.
I kind of kept an eye on it. I would check it out periodically thinking that, you know, this can't last. I mean, come on. They're building planes out of foam core. That's
right.
And I finally said, you know what? I think this has been around for a while. I think I'm going to have time to lasso the boys into it
and see
where it goes. And everything else is, you know, uphill from here.
So what was it about? You went with the balsa planes. Did you do that because you're like, it's local, I can get it? It's fairly
quick. No, it was a garage sale buy.
You just happen to be at a garage sale and be like, wait, you have what for sale? Uncle, give me those three.
27 megahertz Futaba transmitters.
Okay.
60-inch mid-wing and low-wing planes. We had no concept of center of gravity.
No, right.
We tried and tried to get those.
Yeah, we were trying to get the nitro engines to work, and we couldn't get them to work. And we were in the garage, like I think it was in the winter, trying to start it up, and it was seized. And actually, our new next-door neighbor, who we hadn't even talked to at this point, walked over and was like, hey, I used to work at an RC store. Are you guys struggling with this? And we still fly with him to this day. It was a really good way to like get to know him.
So is that Litterbug you're talking about?
No.
It's a different, neighbor. Nice. So that's so cool. What a neat, you never really know when you're like, I used to do that. Let me help you out. So your first biggest hurdle was trying to get the motors working, or was it CG?
Oh, CG.
I think we tried with the motors first, and then we were like, okay, let's just try to put electric on here, because we could not get the engines to work because they were so old.
And electric was just beginning.
Yeah, it was starting to come into its own and be worthwhile. And that's kind of, I think, why Flight Test started when they did was because electric was becoming more common and available. Mm-hmm. LiPos were functional at that point. You know, they could actually be a battery source that keeps your plane up for more than 2 minutes.
Yep.
And then CG after that for sure.
So what is it about? Like, how did you? Because I remember I did the same thing. CG was just like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Oh, you say CG and then you like hold the plane on your fingertips somewhere and go, oh, it's good. You're like, what?
Magic. It's just magic.
Right. So how it's did you get to? How did? What was it that kind of brought it around to, like, actually understanding what they meant and what that was, right? Like, for me, I think I bought a prefab plane, and it had the holes, and it's very, very much described the process, and it's like, and then between that and the videos I was watching, it's kind of like, okay. What I was always fascinated with, and now I get it, because I'm there, but where people grab the plane and just kind of, like, pick it up. It didn't matter what plane. They didn't care. They pick it up and they're like, yeah, it's about right. And they're like, there's no marks on that. That's a totally dip. What are you doing? And then they'd be like, oh, yeah, no, I got it. No, because this is a wing and this is about the middle and this is about the median and this is probably where the cord is. And that's there you go. It's right here. These are the points. You want to balance about here. Actually, a little bit further and then you should be fine. It's like, oh, what the heck? That's magic. How do you do that? So what was it that brought it into focus for you guys?
I'd say the bees, the Harbor Freight.
Harbor Freight. Yellow bees.
Yellow bees and P-51.
So why the yellow bees? What was it about them that kind of helped you get there?
I think the price tag.
The inexpensiveness. And it's pre-made, right? So it's not like you have to spend time making it. You're spending your time. You don't mind spending extra time focusing on how to get it in the air. Like to
and
it right first.
How to fix it over. Yeah. And over, and over
and over. Yeah, as and I understand, over. That's a brushed motor, right? System.
Yeah. Two and it's like motors. Thrust vectoring.
Yeah, or thrust vectoring.
I've almost bought that like a couple times.
let me tell you, don't.
No. Everything I read about it was said it's not worth it. Just all around. It's not. I mean, okay, if you do replace the motors, change the receiver, get a different system, and I'm like, well, that's pretty much half the plane. They're like, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's
It was definitely, I feel like it definitely was a hindrance to us for a while because we weren't learning traditional like stick layouts, like we weren't learning elevator. We weren't Well, all you had basically was throttle up, throttle down. Like that's basically all you had. You had very little control.
Mm-hmm. Right. Has a very special place in my heart, but it is I would not suggest it.
It's not recommended.
No.
Nice.
From that point, we went back and we went in these guys at flight test seem to know what they're talking about. So we all just kind of jumped into that. There really wasn't much in between the Harbor Freight, Yellow Bee, and flight test.
Well, you got Joe his old reliable, his super sports.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it was a Christmas present, if I recall correctly.
Oh wow, there it is. Yeah. Now, was that the Hobby King or whatever manufacturer?
Yeah, yes.
I think it's E-Flight.
No.
Okay, E-Flight. Yeah, I think.
Oh, yeah. Think so? Okay.
I think so.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think so. Whatever the name brand Hobby King has.
Right. Whatever. Right. But I've had that. That was, he got me that for my birthday. I think this was slightly after the bees. And a little, I think we had done a couple of flight test things, but not a whole lot. We crashed a bunch of flight test planes, I guess. And he had got me that for my birthday, and I was struggling to fly because going from a no control to low wing is kind of it's kind of tough. And I just remember crashing it like three or four times before I finally eventually got it flying. And I've had that thing for like 10 years now, and it flies as great as the day I got it, even though it's seen the ground far too many times.
So I'm assuming you guys maybe did you guys try the simulators at all, or was that just like we were already deep?
Well, we got I had the Phoenix, but you still needed to have that little dongle in order to make it work.
I had a simulator. It was an app on my iPod Touch.
Oh yeah.
So whether or not that's a good indicator of helping me or not, I'll let you be the judge of that, but that was the most simulations that I did, at least.
Okay.
But
did you use the simulator to help you, or was it just like you tried it out and went, I'd rather go fly a plane?
That's sort of my thing. I'd rather just go fly the plane. I've never really been much for the simulators because it doesn't have the sort of, I don't know, the plane has a different feel when it's actually in air. Not to say the simulators aren't good, they could definitely help some people if you're a little scared of, you know, getting started, a little worried about crashing that brand new plane you just got. Definitely hit the simulator. Give it a shot at least. That way, if it helps, it helps.
At this point, there's so many low-cost options. Because I remember when we started it, you know, it was $150 to just get a sim. And it was like, oh, geez, that's already a bit. And how deep am I already? And I don't even know if I like this.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, I tell people the sim is excellent to get the left to right reversal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Figured out in your brain and to get a little bit of muscle memory to generally know how to get out of a problem a little bit. So that's perfect enough for you to go, when I'm doing the first go, you have at least a fighting chance.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I was poking through Real Flight 9.5.
Yeah.
And I found the Hadron was in there.
Yeah, it is.
And I said, okay, well, let's try it out because I'm going to be honest, these guys are better pilots than me. Okay,
it's the way the brains work.
The reaction,
yeah,
it's a little bit easier to kind of repath new stuff.
Mm-hmm. But I was able to fly it some, and the last thing I want to do is put that into the ground.
Yeah,
because it's a new plane to you. So
it's way, and the thing, at least in the sim, it's really squirrely. But we watched a flight test review of the Hadron from 6 years ago.
That. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And
it had the loiter and all the highfalutin stuff to make it even easier somehow. I think the one that they had the original and they just went and showed it. And I think they went back and said, hey, we put a flight controller in here and it has this loiter button. We want to see how that works. And it was pretty neat.
I don't think I saw that one.
Yeah. I think they were just, yeah. Anyway, go ahead. It was talking about GPS. I think they used that as their platform.
But it's just, these guys have a better chance of getting it in the air than I can. But if I can get it at least reasonably stable, I'll put some time in it on the sim. So I'm not the one that turns it into foam dust.
It's not going to be me, right? Hey, yeah. When you put the speedster, was it a three channel or four?
Four channel.
Okay. Speedster? And you flew it that way.
Sportster,
sorry.
Yeah.
Sportster.
I got what you're saying.
Oh, the Sportster. And that was a fun story.
It's funny because I just watched that video because Amy's trying to get in and I'm trying to I need a stupid, simple plane that can go slow. It can go fast. It can react in the speed she can handle because right now she's new. So everything's
they don't know who Amy is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Amy is my girlfriend and she wanted to be a fighter jet pilot. Since she was in high school or earlier, and her hearing has always been bad. So she was at the recruiter's office saying, and they're like, I can't wait to get you in. We're going to give you tests and stuff. And this will be perfect. And, you know, they basically got her hearing test back. And they're like, I hate to say it. You can support this, but you won't ever be a pilot. And so she had to kind of rethink a bunch of things, but she's always loved aviation, right? She's always enjoyed the idea of flying stuff. So she's been looking to get in. And right now I got these little two channel guys that you can get in abundance for $50. Right. So she's been flying that and been successful. And I feel like those are really good for teaching left and right reversal and throttle control and throttle equals elevation. Those are good keys to start with. And so she goes out and does that on her own at this point. So she's solid. But I got her in a Wonder, and I've left the rates too high, and it went from flying just fine to completely upside down. That's it, one of those. She's got an F-22 model because she loves F-22s, but same idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's showing
bad
to fly. Was it A380? Is that I think the official model version of it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I can't.
It's one of those two channel stabilized jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to resurrect it for Dan because it didn't work very well for him.
I somehow put it on backwards, and the throttle button was the lights. The throttle was the lights button.
Oh yeah.
I don't know how I managed that, but
you know what? The thing is, if you've got a jumper T16, you might be able to connect to it with your jumper.
Well, I've got
reassigned channels and stuff.
I have a TX16, so
Radio
Master. I still haven't fixed it yet. I need to. I'm not going to bother to learn how to learn Edge, or
I know what you mean.
The first version, I want Edge TX or nothing. Yep.
That's a smart choice. I haven't pushed to X or Edge because I don't want to learn anything. Not yet. I have other things to do, and it's like, okay, when I do, I've got two transmitters that are, you know, I bought one on super discount. And I'm not switching it. All right.
Right.
Enough about me. That's not what's important.
I understand.
Let's see. So you told us about your first attempt and kind of what your you guys are in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys do to support your addiction to airplanes? If you don't mind me asking.
Yeah, sure. I have been working. I graduated college in 2021. With a degree in structural engineering, so that's what I do.
Yeah. Awesome. Yep.
I'm in digital marketing, so that's what I've been doing to keep my addiction strong and going.
Excellent.
I'm in IT. That and my wife, she's very very understanding about my addiction. And
very
and my dogs too. They're appreciative of it. At least one of them, right, Gracie?
Yeah. Because they get to stay put for a long enough to get head pets.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So
This one chases.
Nice. Okay. So is that a blessing or a curse?
It's a
bit of both.
She wants to chase them around while they're flying in the air with no hope of ever catching them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But she really wants to go.
She really wants. I could get them. I can get them.
Just something to run after. Anything, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly, right?
Yep.
Well, that's good. So what transmitters do you guys primarily use? I know a lot of people, when they're new, their first, you know, there's a handful of questions. Obviously, you go down to how does this all work? What plane should I make? And the other one is, what transmitter should I buy? And, of course, there's a lot of transmitter tribes, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Or you guys started with Futaba, right? Because that's what came with the things you got. But
now that you've been
for a while, what did you end up kind of settling on? Anything?
Spectrum.
We went Spectrum.
Okay.
And, I think we started off with the DX6i was like our shared controller for a long time, which I still have kicking around. It's still my favorite controller to this day because I know how to do everything on it. It has no secrets for me.
Yeah.
Right.
And then recently, I'd say like 5 years ago, we all upgraded to DX6Es.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the difference between the I and the E, I guess?
The I is very simple. There's not a whole lot that you could do on it.
Okay. Is it like the internal computer setup in there?
The entire menu is completely different. I couldn't tell you the specifics of it. I don't know a whole lot about controller and transmitters.
No, that's okay.
Very different controllers.
I am out of that ecosystem. I never joined it, as it were. As tempting as it was, I realized that I'm going to buy a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to be stuck to the brand that is promoted by, that promotes or works with Spectrum. So I just know me, and I'm liable to buy as much China junk. And I call it China junk because it doesn't always last for very long, but that's maybe me as a pilot. But knowing that I'm going to do more than just one brand and some of the transmitters too, right? Mm-hmm. And when you buy the little receivers, you can buy a whole range.
Yeah.
And some cost $10 and some cost $50.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh gosh, you know, I don't want to be limited to only buying that. Like, I know me, I'm going to build 70 planes and I needed RXs. So what about, are you guys all on Spectrum then?
Yeah.
How we all start.
Except that I've got a, as I mentioned, TX16.
TX16.
Got him as Radio Master for Christmas.
For my cars.
From mom.
Yep. So,
I was radio That's Radio Master, not Radio Link.
No, this is Radio Master.
Okay, good. Yep. No, they're and that Radio Link does make. That's what I started with, was Radio Link. Mm-hmm. Because it was incredibly functional for the price.
This is $150. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I imagine it does all the things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. I would I don't know if this is a great comparison, but I would consider Spectrum as sort of the iPhone of the transmitter scene.
Yeah.
Where it's just super easy to use, not necessarily the most customizable, not necessarily the most broadband spectrum kind of version of the transmitters, but it works and it does the job and it gets it done, but
it's accessible at every hobby shop.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, and everybody you know has at least seen a Spectrum or has handled a Spectrum, so everybody knows how to fix all the problems that you're having.
There you go. Yeah, that's a big point. So if you were to recommend a transmitter brand to a new guy, what would you go with?
I only know Spectrum, so I just have to say Spectrum. I mean,
okay.
I don't know that I would specifically recommend them Spectrum, aside from that's just what I have experience with, and that's what I could help them like with troubleshoot, I guess.
Well, Larry, you've got a better, I'll call it a bigger spectrum to pull from, a bigger group to pull from. Mm-hmm. What do you think? You've tried, you've worked with the Radio Master now. Again, I've got the jump version of it, which is the before they switched to doing Radio Master.
I would never, ever recommend this to start.
Okay.
You can go down a rabbit hole on this and never come out.
Tell me about it. He's pointing to the Radio Master T6.
The Radio Master, sorry.
No, that's okay. And that's because it has a high learning curve to begin with. And if you're already new, you don't need another curve to ride up. No.
You can get into, I mean, when we first started, I mean, this DX6.
I feel like we started with a DX4 even.
No, yeah, we had DX4.
Yeah, we did.
DX or DXE.
Right. Real simple.
Very simple. That you can get those for less than $100.
Okay, yeah.
The DXE, DXS.
They're entry priced.
This was a garage sale buy from many years ago, at least six, 7 years ago, the DX6 second gen.
Right.
Unfortunately, I blew up Dan's transmitter by accident.
Sounds like there's a story there.
Yeah.
Maybe a private story, but still.
No, I made battery packs out of 18650s for all of our transmitters. One of them wore backwards.
That'll do it every time. Magic smoke came out of that box, didn't it?
And that was at Flight Fest, so
it was
out of commission for about a day or two.
I gave him my transmitter. And I got the DX6 out.
Okay.
But I have this now. Litterbug's threatening. He's threatening to come over and help me with this.
Yeah.
Hasn't happened yet.
I hope he does. I'm going to bug him to go do that because what I've found is because I started with the Radio Link, has about the same amount of function as the jumpers and the Radio Masters. Like it is fully functional. You can assign all the things to all the things, right?
Mm-hmm,
Very similar to like the QX7 and the what's that model that everybody had? Tyrannus. With the Tyrannus, you do all the things, right? So that's where I started. So I already had that learning curve to have fun with. So when I moved to Jumper, it was cool because it's the same learning curve. Right? Yep. I just had to repath kind of where the things were. And it was actually, to me, it was easier. But what I loved is that I could connect with all of my little toys from all the different brands and all the different little receivers that I had bought of different, protocols. And I'm like, I don't need 10 radios. What I need is one radio and 10, whatever the variety is. So that for me, that was the smart choice. But if you start in the ecosystem, like you said, with iPhone, it's a perfect analogy. If you're in it, you're in it. And there's no worries, no mess. You just stay in it and you're good.
Nope.
And there's a huge support community.
Yeah, of course. Right. Yeah. And that's where you kind of go back and forth. Well, what should you choose? Well, good. Okay. So when you had your first success in flight in RC, right? Not the not control line. Although maybe you want to talk about the control line
experience. Not really.
what were you like when you had that like success? You know, kind of what were the feelings you had, or you know, what stood out in your mind about what sticks with you from that experience?
Yeah, I would say so. My first like, I'll call it like an aha moment when I was struggling to fly the Super Sportster for the first time when I had just gotten it. I kept crashing it over and over and over, and I was getting really frustrated. And it kept breaking in different ways, and I'd be like, "Well, that's it. It's toast. It's done." And my dad would help me, be like, "Oh, relax. It's fine. We'll just throw some hot glue on it. It'll be fine." I'm like, "No, it's toasted. It's worthless now. Forget whatever."
It's the end. Let me go up next time.
Yeah. And yeah. I just remember having this moment where I'd actually gone by myself, which we almost always go together to go flying. But for some reason that day, I decided to go by myself and went out to the field, and just something just clicked. And I was just like, okay, so this is how this works. I took off and I was just flying it around, and I was like, I remember going home and being like, I did it, Dad, I did it, it's flying. And he's like, I'll believe it when I see it.
So Dad was a skeptic, but you,
yeah,
you had that epiphany, that
yeah,
was it kind of like an elation, like or was it more I'll call it sense of achievement,
yeah,
like a pride?
Okay. Yeah, I think it was just like, I don't know what it was. I think it's just like, you know, young kid brains, how sometimes they things just don't work, and then all of a sudden something clicks in their brain, yeah, and it just starts working. And I just remember being very, very proud of myself and being like, I did it. And then them both being like, no, you didn't.
I don't prove it. Just show me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is pretty neat, that moment where it clicks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that like, oh,
that's how that works. Yeah.
That's so cool. All right, Dan, what about you?
I don't know if there's any like one singular moment or one singular time that just kind of like, I was like, oh, this is so cool. It was more just like a combination of all the like, little things, like just being able to, like when we were first started finally figuring out the bees, or as well as we could, at least, just being able to sit back on wherever I think it was at, like wherever we were, the place we were at, we were just watching it go in circles. I'm a glider guy. Yeah, or wherever it was. But I just remember watching
it. Middle school.
Sitting back and just watching it go in circles. And I'm a glider guy. I like just when we're at Flight Fest during the summer, I love just putting up our Radian, which is this big 2.6 meter long glider, just putting it up.
Yeah.
Getting up about 100 feet and then just letting it catch thermal after thermal and just watching it go. And start. It's just like, it's like bird watching. It's such it's a calm.
It's relaxing.
It's relaxing. It's calm. It's very euphoric. It's very like, just, I get to just sit here and watch this.
I like and to try and break my planes.
Yeah. Well, I do the same. I do a lot of that too. Don't worry. But it was just sort of one of those moments where I was just sitting back watching the bee just kind of go in circles and being like, wow, This is kind of cool. This is something I could see myself doing for quite some time.
So what was your feeling when you first started to, I guess, ride thermals? When you started to understand what was going on, and you were like, oh, I feel like there's that moment when you are doing gliding and you are trying to thermal, when you actually catch one, it's a different experience than anything prior, at least in my experience. What was your feelings there? If you can remember back
like,
to then.
It's kind of hard to describe because it's almost like you're finding something that you can't see. It's like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just like, you're just doing normally what you would normally do, and all of a sudden your plane's just up higher than it was before, and you're like, what just happened? And you go back around, try and find that same spot, and you're like, wait, there's a spot here that keeps bringing me up and up and up. And it's like, that's so cool. I can just keep doing this. I don't have to waste my battery. I can have a longer flight time. I can just hang out and watch it. It's a really good feeling. But it was just a combination of a little things, like when I was catching my first thermal, just being able to sit back and relax and just take my hands off the stick for a minute and just be like, just let the plane do its thing. And then it's just the little combination of just like all those little events coming together just always felt so good. Being able to look back on it and just remember all the stuff. I guess, like Joe said, it's very much an accomplishment, or it just feels good. just yeah, it's just a good feeling.
It's a warm feeling. It's a natural high for sure. What about you, Larry? What was your first experience when you got that plane up in the air and you were like, "Oh, it's flying! I'm flying this."
Yeah,
it works. At least that was my kind of epiphany.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, being able to do something. My wife asked me, "So you go over there and you fly your plane around in circles?" I said, "Yeah."
I know, right?
But isn't that boring? I said, "No, you're taking this plane, this conglomeration of foam, electronics, radio control, and you're taking it from the ground and you're putting it in the air and you're telling it where to go,
right?
And when to come down. Most of the time,
we hope, right?
Yeah. If this gives you any indication.
That's it. Yeah, he's got a broken plane in his hands where it broke off at about 2/3 down the fuselage, or and about halfway down the fuselage, about 2/3 from the cockpit.
Guts hanging out.
Yeah, guts are hanging out the bottom.
Yeah. $35 a new fuse. I don't have to mess with this.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, and I said it's some people get it and some people don't. It's simple as that.
Well, a lot of people, I used to rock climb when I was younger. I would love to continue it if I got my body back in shape. But everybody's like, you just climb a wall and come back down. Like, what's the point? Like, the point is because it's there. It's a challenge. It's not simple. It's at the end of it, you overcame a ton of difficulties just to get to that point.
Yep.
You learn things along the way that you didn't expect. And it's one of those things. Now you've got tools in your tool belt to use later. That's right. Pretty cool.
Yeah. I think it's also just like the fact that when you're going up in the air, you hope you know what's going to happen, but you never know what's going to happen in the moment to moment differences. So like you could catch a stray wind that pushes you and you have to counteract for that. Or you could catch a thermal and have to account for that. And it's just a lot of your brain having to constantly be working to figure out how to keep you up. I think that's the interesting part of it.
Yeah, I try to tell people, I'm like, so the way a plane flies is imagine putting it on a point and you got to keep it there. You know, like it's on a ball and it's sort of sitting on the ball. And you've got to use controls to keep it on that ball. I mean, there's a little bit of a window where it's okay. But if it's out of that window, you're in trouble. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, it's a little bit of a challenge. It's not the easiest thing to do. It's kind of like those people who get on that balance board, right? Mm-hmm. Like some people, they work out how to do it. And they're like, oh, cool, this is fun. And then it's fun. I'm like, what's the point of that?
Yeah, it's like they say in Toy Story, it's not flying, it's falling in style.
Yeah.
Falling in style, yeah. That's it. Yeah. So I'm, I don't know. It's really, really cool. I remember my first experiences being kind of, the same kind of the way you describe it. It's just this each like, oh, wow. Holy cow. Look at that. And I wish there was an easy way to explain that to people who don't get it. Yeah. You fly it in circles, but it's not easy to do that. You know, it's a big challenge. And when the flying in circles gets boring, you start throwing in tricks and you make it much harder, or you try something different because it flies in circles differently every time.
If it was a different plane. If it was simple to do, then everybody would do it.
Yeah. I mean, if you had the propensity to it, everybody would be doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's good. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I was going to add on. Everybody could do it. Let's talk about drone. I'm sorry. I said that word. I'm sorry.
You said the D word. We talked about it. No D word.
I know, man. No D word.
No, you're right. And that is one of the difficulties of the expansion and acceptance of something, right? Is now you've got people who maybe have access it. And that's actually what one of my questions was going to be. Like, how long did you spend getting yourself ready to fly, right? I know I watched, must have been 100 hours of videos. It felt like I watched all the, you know, for a while, I was just watching them because like, these are neat. And then like every time I'm like, I think I could do that. You know, maybe I should try that. And like, oh, I don't know. And I looked at the, and I looked up components every so often. I'm like, oh, that's more than I want to put out right now to try it. And then they had the 100 for 100 video, 100 miles an hour plane for $100. And I was like, get out of here. $100 I'll put down. And it's been downhill ever since. But I mean, what did you guys do to get ready? I know you watched the one video, but how long were you guys, Larry, were you looking? Yeah. How many videos?
Oh, I couldn't possibly imagine because we consumed the media that
the library. Flight
Test put. I mean, they made it look so easy.
Mm-hmm.
They made it appear inexpensive, and it is.
If you're gonna know what you're doing, it is.
Yeah.
If you're gonna spend, a garage sale fine for $50 for a DX6,
right?
Or $150. This is where most of the money is, right here, is in the transmitter.
Or $30 if you really got to go cheap. Now, granted, this is not what I would recommend, but you can get in awful cheap.
Yeah. So it's very affordable. When we're at the middle school flying and somebody asks, well, how much does that cost?
Yeah. That's usually a big question.
What's your budget? I mean, okay, flight test, simple stick. The Wonder, any of those, high wing type planes are easy to build, easy to fly, and it's repeatable.
Electronics from plane to plane. Like if you crash one plane irreplaceably, then you just pull the electronics out, spend another 2 hours building a new plane and throw the electronics in there and you're good to go again.
Yeah. It's funny. Amy gets so mad when I say it's a $5 airplane.
Yeah.
People are like, what does this cost? I'm like, well, the upkeep is about $5. I said, to get in, it's like $100 to $150. I'd honestly recommend about two. Mm-hmm. But once you have that, everything else, granted, if you blow something up, you're going to have to replace it. But if you're just replacing planes, they're about $5. And what are you talking about? I'm like, it's Dollar Tree foam board. That's four sheets of foam and an afternoon, and you're ready to go again. All the stuff when you land on the ground in the wrong way, you have to replace a prop. That's it. All the other stuff, hopefully you probably didn't bust the motor or the speed controller, the battery or anything else. You probably still can pull out the servos and use them. So really, you're just rebuilding a plane, and that costs like $5.
How many goblins did we build, boys?
Oh boy, we've probably built 6 or 7 over the years, maybe 8.
I feel like a piece. I feel
a
like
piece,
six,
right?
Piece. That's about yeah.
Now, and... now, do you guys get the speed build kit, or do you take the plans and you cut them out by hand, or
both.
How do you end up making
good old fashioned way?
Yeah, I will say I one of my one of the things I like to do is when I go to Flight Fest, I like to buy a speed build kit of whatever plane that looks interesting to me that year. And that's my little treat to myself. But other than that, we hand build, like scratch build.
Yeah. Okay. I was wondering, Larry, if you were like, all right, give me a weekend and I'll bust out a bunch and we'll build it together. Yeah. Like I know the old fogies in the background, I literally took a sheet of stack of five or whatever. And I took it out on the scroll saw. I cut 4 or 5 of them out all at once.
I tried that. I tried that. I didn't like it.
No, it wasn't. I mean, it's not as sharp on the edges.
Right. Well,
but
yeah.
I had to develop that because I was faced with how am I going to build 25 planes? And I had a week to go. Like, I'm not cutting out 25 planes. There's no way.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, if I put them in groups of 8. And I could, I could do that. Yeah, I can handle it.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Laser, he's got a laser cutter, yeah.
No, it's a laser.
Yeah, it's a little laser cutter.
Now, does that basically just score it, or does it fully cut?
I'm still learning it.
Okay. I know a lot of the guys with the diode say it cuts the paper, and it cuts about halfway through the foam. So it gives you a good guide.
Yeah.
And it gets you started.
Yeah.
That's a rabbit hole. So we can discuss that another time.
That's a new thing that we're trying to introduce to our hobby skills is laser cutting.
I was looking to do a needle cutter.
I've got one of those and it's the same. It's a rabbit hole. It's good when it's worked. When it's worked, it's awesome. But I have yet to get mine to work consistently enough. I keep busting the needles. So
yeah, that thing came from my uncle who got a that's a five and a half watt, and he got a new one. He got a 20 watt, and
okay,
he gave it to me.
Nice.
So
that's a good way to start.
Yeah, I have no, you know, I plan on expanding that out to make it twice as deep. Yeah. So I don't have to modify the foam core plans that much.
Yeah. Okay. Do you guys read forums? Or did you when you were beginning or like you involved in the communities? Obviously, you go to the Flight Fest. But
RC groups.
I know. Yeah, obviously, Captain Video, you are a part of all the different forums. I've seen you on both of them. RC yep. groups and Flight Test. I'm sure you're in a couple others. RC Universe maybe. And
yep.
Who knows where else, right?
Outer Zone.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Do you guys also belong to those and kind of track on things or?
I would say not as much. I pop in and out of like the RC subreddit or the quad subreddits, answer a couple questions that people have, or whenever I have a problem that I can't figure out, I'll post on there usually.
Yeah, I'm very much a lurker as well. I just like to go like find information. I'm not so much one that gives it out, because I even though we've been doing this for close a decade plus, I still don't feel like I don't feel like I have the skills to be telling people what to do.
Right?
Yeah. I know I do, but it's just there are days where I'm just like, I don't know if I should be telling anybody how to do anything. Because then if they have problems, they come back to me. It's like, you told me this. It's like, sorry.
Oh. What you do is you share your experience.
Yeah.
And glean from it what they need.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's kind of what we do in the podcast. Where I was like, look, we don't know what we're doing, but we don't know what we're doing. I mean, we're just, we're as new at some of this stuff as everybody. And so we want to share what we find as we go and find the pitfalls with you. And hopefully if you're right behind us and go, oh, don't step there. You know, if you can avoid spending $150 on a crud plane or or go down a rabbit hole that you're like, if you don't like this kind of thing, don't go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah,
save you time and money, and you know, rather focus your stuff on other things. So you guys talked about you guys fly together nearly every time, which I think is I'm with your girlfriend. I think that's, you know, I don't know, as I kind of, my kids grow and they're at the 13 and 15, 13 and.
That's not where they started. I mean.
Right. Yeah. And I'm kind of like, you know, we need to get together and do this more. Like I go out all the time and then they're like, oh, do we have to? And I'm like, come out and do this with me. And sometimes they have fun. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they don't want to fly at all. Sometimes they like, maybe. And then they come back going, wow, that was a lot of fun. what are some, can you share each of you maybe one of your favorite memories or one of the ones that sticks out? Share it with our audience of why you love flying together. And then I know you guys have them one together. Do you have any like a separate memory is what I'll follow up with too. Is there a separate moment that you remember for you that was awesome? You know, maybe it wasn't like a great joint experience, but it was one of the best for you.
Yeah, I got one. I remember when we talked about it a bit already, but we made a bunch of Goblins. It was one of our favorite planes for quite some time. Mm-hmm. 3-4 years, we were just making those, breaking them, making more, and then doing that. But I remember the first one we ever made. I think we were all, I forget where we were at, but we were maiding mine for the first time ever. Or I can't remember if it was Maiden or if it was just one of the flights afterwards. But I remember my first successful flight with it, where I was able to land it and it came back in one piece. And I was able to just like turn to my dad, gave him the biggest high five. And we were just both so elated about it. It was one of the coolest things ever, because it was like, this is one of the fastest planes we've ever flown. It's one of the hardest planes we've ever flown.
It's twitchy if you don't have it set up right.
And we didn't, of course. We didn't know what expos were. We didn't know where we didn't know what throws were.
We had our prop on backwards, and somebody one time at Flight Test, somebody came up and was like, "Hey, your prop is really noisy. You might have it on backwards.
You might have it. You might have it going the wrong way." And you're like, "Yeah, I thought I was a little low on the thrust."
But yeah,
everybody else is zipping, and I'm just barely making it.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah,
just having that first successful flight coming in and just being like, let's go, we did it. It was finally, just so many times of crashing it and failing right. and just getting knocked back down and getting back up. It just felt so good. And just having that moment with my brother and my dad, it was just one of the coolest things.
How many times did you glow the nose onto your goblins?
We at one point we had, I think, like half a dozen extra noses because we were like, we were breaking them so often that we would, I think at one point we even put like extra foam in the nose. That way when the battery got ejected, it wouldn't take as much, like as much of a hit.
Yeah, but because
it was insane the number of those noses we had. I think we covered a few of them in shiny duct tape too, just for the aesthetic of it. It was really funny. Nice. But yeah, that was one of my favorites.
Yeah, the poor man's fiberglassing.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I'm kidding.
I did that for one flight test to take it into combat. And for some reason it just didn't want to go.
Oh, well, you glass it? Was.
Well, using duct tape.
Okay.
And I had some issues with it.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get it to, I couldn't take it up. But
oh, bummer.
Darn it, I'm thinking I'm gonna build one for combat this year.
You need to build a 200% one.
200%?
I mean they're not big, right?
No.
So a 200% one is like a 60-incher, right?
Yeah.
That's not too terrible, is it?
That might be a thought.
I'm just saying.
I've not scaled one. That'll be a technical challenge for me, I think.
What to scale it up?
You got it.
You've got a laser cutter now.
Yeah.
At worst, it could mark out the 200% version of it on your boards.
Yeah, I suppose.
You know how to use Adobe Photoshop. You could scale that up, no problem. Those plans.
Or, I know. Right, or scale it up at 167%, which is the difference between a 5-inch and a 10-inch. As far as I don't know, it's like about the area percentage. I'm talking out my rear. Don't listen to me.
Math is hard.
When they scale up, they always seem to scale from, you know, take it and go 167%, and that gives you like that next size category. Like you can use a CPAC with that, if I remember right.
Well, we don't really subscribe to the pack. We just build it that way.
Fair. That means you guys have probably a far better understanding of how the whole power system needs to be built than most.
I like to think so.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's probably from trial and error, but still you learn a lot along the way. Yeah. Like, okay, this can only take 10 inch. It's after that, it's squirrely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, trying to, what was it? When I was trying, we were flying the simple stick first. All right. It says we can do this with 3-cell or this with a 4-cell, but we have to scale the prop.
Right.
You know,
right. Like, and then because a 4-cell means it's spinning faster, which means it's pulling more air volume and you have to have them equal. So to make them equal, you reduce the diameter of the prop. So now then it equals out. That's really what you're doing essentially. But it's at first it's like, I don't know. They tell me 1-inch for 1-inch. That's all I know.
Well, like, I know.
I could scale down and make it faster, or I could scale up or make it slower. That's all I know.
I know how I started. That back here in the darkness, you can't see. I have a 60-inch Wacko biplane. Awesome. Balsa, nitro engine, but I decided I'm gonna switch over the powertrain to electric.
Okay.
So I have to do all the math to figure out if the motor I think I've got is big enough to I think the motor is big enough to do the job. So I gotta do that first. I have to do the math. Don't want to take it up and turn the balsa dust because I didn't do the math right.
Right. Or burn an ESC up and let out the magic smoke.
That's true.
I mean you got 3.5 months to make it work for Flight Fest.
3.5 months. Look, if I can build a 20-foot giant mess in the 3.5 months that I have, and I will.
the aircraft carrier.
What? Yeah.
The aircraft carrier. Yeah.
Yeah. When we're done recording, I'll bring the computer around so you can see what nonsense that is. That's the scale model. It fits through the door. The next one won't. certain. It'll have to be assembled in pieces. I'm really kind of terrified, but I'm excited.
No, that'll be awesome.
We can talk about that.
We'll discuss that later. Yeah. Don't want to.
Yeah. What about you, Joe?
I think one of the memories that sticks out the most to me is just the I remember one time we were at Flight Fest all flying together, and we had just gotten the, what's the size of wingspan of the Cessna? Is it the Cessna?
Oh, 150? It's 1.5 meters.
Yeah, so it's a 1.5 meter span.
4.5 feet, yeah.
Yeah.
It's carbon Z.
Big plane. And we took it to Flight Fest, and it's a little bit too big for our flying field. Like, we've flown it there before, but it's a little uncomfortable. Okay. But yeah. I remember taking it up there, and just as I'm flying around, it was like the first time we flew it ever. And my hand, my thumbs were just shaking on the sticks. So I'm like, oh my God, this is so nerve wracking. Because the runway was big.
Your first time flying with like 20 other planes in the air all at once?
It wasn't the first time, but it was the first time flying with an expensive plane.
Okay, yeah.
So I was just like nervous and my thumbs were shaking. And the runway's big, but it's not like really big. And for a big plane,
that's actually part of what I'm nervous. Yeah, part of what I'm nervous about with what I'm building. It's like, yeah. I don't know that I can take this off. I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's not like the time we took it up was not like during the events where they have like the big plane flies. Right. So it was just everybody was flying. Everybody was running out on the runway, running back. Watching. And I'm like, I need to land. I can't land. And eventually I was able to bring it in and land it kind of in the beams. I ended up messing up the front wheel. But I just remember being like, I didn't destroy the plane. Let's go.
Yeah, that's excessive. Returning it without too much damage.
Yeah, I remember just being so excited because I was like, I was able to fly it and land it. Let's go.
Go ahead. Sorry, Larry.
It's got the tricycle landing gear.
Yeah.
So if you don't come in right, you're gonna bend that nose gear. Yeah. And we've all done it.
Yeah. If you don't bend it, you rip it out. One of the two.
That's not happened yet.
Not on that one.
To fly that one. You guys still haven't. No, I haven't flown it yet.
All right. Well, you'll fly. Well,
I guess you know what's coming next on the next one, right?
Yes, I do.
Bring it out. Nice. Let's see. What? Where was I going to go with that? It'll come to me, and I'm not going to worry about it. Is there a shared memory that you guys all remember going like, that was one of the most awesome days that we had flying together?
Do we want to talk about the apprentice landing?
this would lean into, I think that was the original other question was, how about a crash story that you are excited to share?
Like, it wasn't a landing story.
Everything came.
Air quote landing or like?
No, it actually landed. I was flying at a flight test. And, it was time for it to come down. And so I called it to bring it down. Well, I tried to bring it down and it just wasn't coming down, not very well. So something was funky with it. But the funny thing is, now, mind you, our campsite was way towards the back. All right.
This is at Flight Fest.
Okay.
All right.
Really great memories are happening at Flight Fest.
Yeah.
Nice. Go ahead.
I was actually able to bring it down, if you can call it that. It was within feet of our campsite.
Yeah, so it had gone behind the line, and they were blowing the horns, and we were like, we're trying, we can't do anything about it. And we saw it go behind some, like, of the pop-ups, and we were like, oh, crap, maybe we hit a car, maybe we, like, hit somebody over there. And we like rush over with some of the staff, and it was sitting next to our car at our campsite.
I have no idea how I pulled that off.
Oh, you couldn't have been any luckier, right?
Yeah.
It was one of the craziest things I've ever seen.
It is terrifying when you're like, it's out of control and it's going in an area where there's people.
Yeah.
And, you know, tents and all sorts of other who knows what. Like, please, please, please don't do anything dangerous. You know, don't hurt anybody.
Yeah, I think luckily it was also one of the first days of the events. There wasn't a whole lot of people there yet.
Right.
Yeah.
So we were
if you can get early, try your sketchy planes then. You're less likely.
I don't recall who it was, but somebody went through and checked all the settings on the receiver, and then we didn't have it. somehow all the presets changed somehow.
Like and, it got reset or something, yeah.
Something. So after he reset it, it was all good.
It's aliens. Aliens did it.
Yeah.
It happens too. and that's just if you can, I always try to tell news like if you can, like have somebody write down a check procedure, pre-flight check.
Yeah.
Things to make sure you don't forget to do. Like check your CG. Yes, you know it's good. Check it anyway.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, there were no issues with it in the pre-flight.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something happened. Yeah. But yeah. We got lucky and it ended up at our campsite. So if anything was gonna get hurt, it was gonna be ours.
Well, I'm so glad that it came down without any damage to other things.
Yeah.
You could walk away with your head held higher than if it had done otherwise.
Oh, we still had our heads way down. We were so embarrassed.
No, yeah. It was like, oh man.
We were hoping they didn't piss them off enough that, okay, you guys got to go.
No,
yeah.
I swear this doesn't normally happen.
Yeah.
Nice. All right, let's see. Do you guys have any full-scale aspirations? Do you guys fly as a pilot? I mean, you guys are old enough to potentially have a pilot's license or a plane or something like that. Do you guys do that or do you have a desire to?
Not particularly, but one of my buddies from when I was, that I've been best friends with since I was in, middle school is a full-scale pilot. And he got his pilot's license when we were in college. And he keeps threatening to take me with him and start to teach me how to fly full scale.
Do yeah, it. We gotta get on Connor's back about that.
Do yeah. it. You're gonna do Maybe. It at the cost of like. You're gonna do it at the cost of sharing gas, probably.
Yeah.
Because if you're not a commercial pilot, you cannot collect more than just sharing expenses.
Yeah.
I can tell you
one of the cheapest ways you can even get checking out if you like it.
I can tell you a long time ago. When the boys were still a glint in my wife's eye. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was pregnant at the time with them. We went whitewater rafting cause the doctor said it was okay. It was still early in the pregnancy. One of the things we did was, they had a tour, I guess a Cessna high, a high wing where whoever the pilot was would take you up. And fly you around the New River. Mm-hmm. We flew under the New River Bridge.
Oh, wow.
Which is probably against the rules.
It is now. Yeah, definitely but now.
he let, I was in the co-pilot seat and he says, would you like to fly it?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. He gave me just a quick once over and I was able to do a little bit of this that just scared the living crap out of me. Because I had everybody's lives. I mean, I knew.
It yeah.
I had everybody's lives in my hands.
Yeah, all of a sudden, the responsibility of being a pilot becomes real.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of what you're like, oh, it's an RC, and you're like, it's cool, and it's up in the air, and you're like, oh, wait, I'm in control of this, which means where it goes is my charge, and yeah. I don't want it to hurt anybody or anything, so I got to be on it. And
which is why safety is such an important thing in this hobby. You just gotta be so careful at all times,
right? And you gotta at all the places, right? As you're kind of checking out your plane, you got to make sure that the motor's not going to spool up and run away or chop a finger or because that's possible.
You've never done that, right, Dan?
No.
Never.
What are you talking about?
Never hit yourself with a prop.
No,
I've got a couple scars from when I did it. And thankfully, it wasn't too terrible. Yeah. But you just kind of like be careful.
They probably don't remember the Young Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah,
I remember that. Yeah.
Well, it's still going. That's still a program you can do.
Yeah, they did it when they were.
Oh, nice.
I feel like.
Well, why don't you guys talk about that experience and then tell me is that something that you. You know, obviously, you may be in a spot shortly that you might be able to think about it. You know, you said you got your one friend who's like, come on, let's do it.
Yeah.
So what was the Young Eagles experience like? If you don't know, like if you've never heard of it, there's this program that is sponsored by the EAA, I think,
mm-hmm.
the Experimental Aircraft Organization. And they want to get kids to be pilots. I mean, you know, you don't get new pilots without inspiring them somehow. And they have a chapter
at the Ohio State University.
Excellent. Yeah. And so some of your local chapters will sponsor this program where they'll cover the costs of the fuel and the plane time. And they'll have a pilot bring up young, aspiring pilots and have them, you know, have a flight experience and understand mm-hmm. what it means to fly a plane and give them all a go. It's really cool.
All the kids did it. My sons and my three daughters all did it.
I remember we were really young when we did it.
How was that young wise? When you say really young, what does that mean?
I want to say like probably 10 like 10 or 11.
Yeah, we were like 10 or 11. I don't have a lot of memories of it, but I do remember it was very loud.
Very hot.
And very hot.
Yeah, it
I
can
remember
be.
We were flying over, I believe, a quarry. And it was just very hot, very loud. And I think we were sitting in the back seat and I could just see out the side window. And it was really cool.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
The whole procedure to actually get up there was always just really, like, the headset was really way too big for me, but it was, you know, it was still doing its job, but
right.
it's a really cool experience just because it's not like the only, I've never been on a commercial flight outside of that. It's the only time I've ever actually flown.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And that's what's funny about it is because we do all this RC flying planes and stuff, and the only experience we've ever had is in a single engine prop.
Nice.
Plane.
But it was really cool. I think it's an incredible program for people who are trying to get into it. I think it's a really cool, really good way to inspire kids.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it definitely gave us a little more exposure to you know, the whole aviation scene, and you know, kind of, I'm sure that was a very large part in showing us that this kind of thing could be really, really cool to do, and inspired us to get into RC.
Yeah, it's even there for a possibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I had a field on the way to church, right? So every time we'd go to our church and come back, there's a flying field on the one way, and then there'd always be guys, you know, on Sunday. Of course, Sunday's the best day to do that stuff, and the guys would be out flying. So every time we passed, we'd be like, man.
Yeah.
So, you never really know, kind of, that's a good way. So if you haven't looked into it, we're going to try to close it out. Honestly, I could probably talk to you guys for days, to be honest. I'm in, you know, like, let's do it. But at the same point, I know we all got to move on with our nights. It's getting kind of late. Tips. Let's see. What plane would you recommend to a noob? If they're starting out, what would you recommend? What kind of plane what plane specifically do you think they should start with? Do you have advice on that?
A high wing, like a guinea pig, or just like a cub, one of those just slow flyers, lots of control. The simple stick is really good. Just a nice high wing that you're not worried about. It's something that, you know, you're gonna be able to repair pretty easily. So the simple stick, the guinea pig, any of the super mm-hmm. cubs. Those things are all great just because they have a lot of control. They're pretty slow. You can get them going quick if you really give it give it some sauce on behind it. But I think those have always been a really good plane to start with.
Yeah, okay. I think it also comes down to the cost. So if you're willing to spend a little bit more money, get something that's got AS3X. If you're not, if you don't have,
I was going to ask about kind of stabilization.
Money, yeah, if you don't have that kind of money, you know, go with the flight test plane that you can crash over and over until you learn. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, the great thing about the flight test, even this, like the simple stick, for example, you learn. I mean, putting it together, making it, and okay, you're taking the wing and you're folding it over. Why is it doing that? Well, you're putting dihedral in it, and
right.
You know, it helps it.
The construction.
Yeah,
and you're going to appreciate what you've done, right, boys?
Mm-hmm.
When you build it and you fly it successfully, there's a degree of satisfaction and accomplishment that you can't. Well, it's still, even if you buy one that's, you know, a Horizon Hobby or something like that, but building it and then flying it.
Yeah, that's a matter of expectation, right? You buy a product mm-hmm. that says this will fly, so you expect it should fly. So you're not mm-hmm. you're not kind of like, oh wow, this is awesome, it's flying. Like, no, it should fly. You might be surprised that you can fly it as well as you're flying it. But whereas a flight test plane, I mean, they say, like, if you build it this way, it should fly. But there's also the, like, well, what do you mean by should?
Yeah.
It's because, well, you built it. I mean, you tell, you can tell how well you did it.
Well, you're not going to get an 8-year-old to do it, but you could probably get a 13 or 14-year-old to do it and understand what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's kind of, yeah. I mean, I used to do a whole thing with Cubs where we'd build a bunch of small, actually a glider, single sheet gliders.
Mm-hmm.
And, granted, we had a lot of help from the parents, but, the kids were like, what, this is this, what? And I'm like, look, you can buy one of the store-bought ones. Here's how you reinforce it. You do this, this, and this, and just take some tape in these spots and off you go. Mm-hmm. And you won't have the experience I had as a kid where I threw it. It did a loop because I didn't know how to balance it. And it crashed on a wing and broke the thing in half. And nobody knew how to repair it because my mom didn't care. Didn't have time. My brothers were too old to give a hoot. And I was just like, I want another one. I'll try that again. I want to learn. And they're like, yeah, I'm not spending another $8 for you to crash it in 2 seconds. Sorry, kid. You know, I'm like, oh, man. But if I had known that if you just put tape on the leading edge and the top and the bottom of the wing and up and down the fuselage, you got that thing for a long while. And I showed them that, and then I usually show them kind of, and then they build this plan. I'm like, you can do this. There are plans here. You go to this site, you download any plan, try to build it. Most of them have build videos. Like, go try it. Have fun.
Yeah,
and that, together, you know. And
in that,
like,
same vein, don't be afraid to fail. Like, this is it's a hobby that you're gonna crash. Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of if you're gonna crash; it's a matter of when.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a matter of how hard. And it's learning how to mitigate those crashes. It's learning how to rebuild after that. It's learning how to keep that confidence. You know, mm-hmm. it's gonna happen. You just got to roll with the punches and learn how to fix it. And in that process, you're gonna get so much better at it so fast. I promise.
Do you feel that the way flight test videos were structured, and they still kind of are, where when the crashes happen, it's almost a joyous event.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, yay!
It's fun. It's fun when you crash. It makes a memory.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that contributed to your ability to not to pick up from a crash and move ahead?
Yeah. I do not fear crashing my planes anymore, because when I crash, I'm not like, oh, nowadays. I mean, definitely when I started, it was a lot more devastating. But nowadays, when I crash, I'm like, oh, the thing is in 24 different pieces, a little spit and hot glue. I'll be good to go.
Back together. Good to go.
Nice. Yeah, you have to get past the failure. Like Dan said, you're going to crash. It's not the end of the world. As long as you didn't break any of the major components, you know, bend the shaft, mm-hmm. blow up the ESC, you know, smash the receiver,
strip out a servo,
pull them all out, put them in the new, build a new one. You know, we were building the Goblins in less than an hour.
Yeah,
they're very quick build.
Yeah, but it's an easy fix.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get past that, once you understand that it's an easy repair, you're going to take more chances and you're going to learn more.
Mm-hmm. Quicker. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing I would say is do your research, watch videos, go on forums, listen to podcasts about RC.
we got one right here.
Yeah. And you'll do great.
Yeah. And we mentioned too, that I don't think they go anymore, but I think they still have the episodes out. That's a whole
lot of
information right there.
You have to go back 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
But
information's generally still pretty solid. I mean, it's not, the planes they're talking about are not the new and the greatest or whatever.
Right.
But most of the principles are identical. And the experiences are time-tested and mm-hmm. the same, I would say.
Yep.
So I guess that kind of leads us into the last thing I'd like to finish out with is... you know, could you each share maybe 3 tips or 3 pieces of advice to give someone who's joining the hobby? Either things to avoid. don't buy a yellow bee.
don't be afraid to fail. It's not the end of the world.
I would say check your crap.
What does that mean? For if you don't know.
Go for it, Dad. You're the one that always yells at me. Check your CG. Check your ailerons. Took your rudder.
Yeah, that's right.
Took your power. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
You do the or you do a high five.
Right, you do the high five method of checking to make sure all the surfaces are going the right direction.
Yep.
And that basically means that when the ailerons are coming up, your stick should be pointing to it. And same with the elevator.
Yep.
Right. Pushing down on the elevator is the elevator surface should come up. So giving a high five. Right. And I think it was like check the squareness. Check the directions of the stuff, make sure the power system is correct and going the right direction. You got it?
Control surfaces, rips and tears, angles, and power.
Right.
Big brain.
Angles are making sure that you don't have a twisted fuselage. Yeah, yeah. So if you have twists or off angle stuff, your plane will not go straight. It will go
that one over there.
Well, in your case, it'll come right out of the sky. But I mean, it'll start kind of curving. Like if your tail, if your rudder isn't in line with the center of your plane, you're going to have a permanent turn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you do something about it. How about it? Go ahead, Dan.
I have paint it before you build it, because painting it after you've built it, there's gonna be so many little parts that aren't painted that are just gonna you're gonna open up the fuselage. There's gonna be a little bit that's not painted. You're like, oh, I missed that part. I missed this bit. Paint it before you build it. It makes it so much easier. At least with the foam core builds, it's just so much easier that way.
Or just do stripes.
Yeah, that too works better. Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, if you're going to paint the whole thing, ahead of time is much better than after the fact.
Fluorescent colors, so you paint one side different, top different from the bottom, so you can tell if you're upside down. Like I flew my Crescendo. That's why it broke. I flew it into the sun, lost orientation, went the wrong way into the ground.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's do. Okay. Let's do. I guess that's. I think that kind of concludes. Let's go to a lightning round. I'm going to give a this or that kind of question. And I'm going to ask you to give me the first thing that comes to mind. And, you know, whatever comes in, I'm going to have you guys go, each of you just shout it out in turn. And then we'll go down these really quick, and then we'll finish out the episode, and you guys can close out with any kind of thing you'd like to add that we might not have covered. So let's do this. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Go for it.
The lightning round. Okay, and this is where I imagine I'm going to put these like sound effects in, but I never do. Okay. All right, guys. Sit or stand?
Stand.
Dan?
Stand.
Okay. Pinch your thumb?
Pinch. Thumb. No, thumb. Thumb. We're all thumbs. Oh.
Okay. Futaba, well, we already kind of went through this, but Futaba, T6 Radio Master, or Spectrum?
Spectrum.
Spectrum.
Both Radio Master and Spectrum.
Okay. Micro, Park, or Giant Scale?
Park.
Okay. Scout, duck, or goblin?
can't hear you. They can't hear you shake your head, Joe.
No.
Park.
We can't.
Okay.
Okay. Scout, duck, or goblin?
Goblin.
Goblin.
Duck.
Nice. Snow, water, pavement, or tall grass?
Yes.
Pavement.
Pavement.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes.
At least when you can reach it.
Nice. P-38 or P-61?
P-38.
Yeah, P-38.
Okay, build or fly?
Build.
Build.
Okay. Balsa, foam board, or waterproof foam board?
Waterproof foam board.
Yeah, waterproof.
Waterproof is best.
Okay. 3S, 4S, 6S?
4S.
4S.
Okay. Access or allies?
Allies.
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 Landing gear or belly land? I know it makes Ellie. You sound like you're an evil person if you suggest Axis, but there's so many really awesome planes.
There's so many good ones, yeah.
In I'm talking about regarding planes, like they so. Really please, are, I'm not yeah. like what side were you on? Like no.
The Japanese planes. Have some sick planes.
I know there's some really good ones. I'm like, oh, look at that. All right, anyway, all right, landing gear or belly land?
Belly land.
Yeah.
Okay, and last but probably most important question that we have in this list is creamy or chunky?
Chunky.
That's a hard one.
Dan gets it.
It's harder to spread, but it's worth it.
Chunky
all the way. Chunky. Yeah.
Okay, I was going to say, does your answer change if you include marshmallow fluff in the mix?
No, I think I'm sorry. Not chunky. Really.
I'm a chunky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. See, I'm a creamy, but if there's fluff, you got to have the chunk.
You got to try out some honey, peanut butter and honey. That's the combo.
Oh, peanut butter and honey is yummy.
I love peanut butter and honey.
Man, I'm getting hungry again.
I know.
Okay, and then now maybe we can kind of close this out and talk about the topic we're about to join in on, which is how you hang your airplanes. You guys want to take a short minute and talk about how you guys hang your airplanes? What you discovered was the best?
I can go. In college, I learned how to do 3D modeling. So I use SolidWorks and I've 3D modeled little hooks that can just hold the props on each of my planes that they can hang on.
Okay.
And then I mount those to the wall. And so they just hang off the wall.
Okay. Yeah. So you mount it by the prop.
Yep.
They hang.
Yeah, I mean, I've got my master build FTA-10 that I hang it by the rear vertical stabilizer. It's because it has a
U shape.
No, it has a skewer across, so I know it's not going to get like hanger rash.
Right.
It's going to be. My girlfriend is amazing and lets me display it. So.
Well, it's a beautiful looking plane. You did a great job building it.
That's it.
We lost him.
All right, why don't we talk to you, Larry, and then hopefully Dan can kind of get back.
All right. I downloaded just these elf brackets from Thingiverse, and the ones I can get on the wall are hanging on that, but the ones that are hanging off the stairs, the back of the stairs, I use a rubber band and a screw to hang off of the off the prop.
Yeah. Okay.
We're big prop hangers.
With a rubber band and an anchor point.
Mm-hmm. Two rubber bands, by the way. So if one breaks, the other one's still there.
I find that, when I hang it just by the one rubber band, it always comes down.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'll be like going along and all of a sudden I'll hear, oh no. I hear this crash from the other room. I'm like, oh gosh, something happened. Did the cats knock something over? Did the dog get skittered? And then I go, oh no, it's an airplane. Yeah. Darn it. Well, nice. Awesome. Well, thank you guys. Do you have anything you want to add? Maybe something we might have missed? I know Dan is, I think he's
I'm back in on my phone. My internet just had a little bit of a hiccup. Sorry about that. Well,
no, it's okay. It happens sometimes. Welcome back. So is there anything you'd like to leave with? Any parting comments or statements or whatever? But I before we go, I do... Joe couldn't be here, but I mean, he and I both really appreciate you guys joining me today and talking over the beginnings of your hobby. Anything you want?
I really appreciate you having us. It was a blast.
Yeah, it was great.
It didn't take much of talking into it. So
good. I'm glad to hear it.